Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at director Gavin Hood and his Oscar-winning 2005 film, Sotsi. Returning on the show today to talk about Sotsi is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So this is, first of all, I really like this movie. I thought it was great. I think this is like a perfect example of like what a character arc is in a movie. Like if it's like film 101, people don't know what a character arc is, this would be a great example to show them, because he's completely different from what he was in the beginning from what he is in the end. And I think that's what really makes this, that whole arc is really what makes this movie for me.
I think that's the strong point of it too, because he really does have a pretty radical transformation, but it's so gradual that it kind of builds to the point where, you know, the way he is at the end is so radically different, you didn't even see all the little things that led up to it. Like, he starts off fighting, he's wearing a leather jacket, he looks tough. And by the last scene, he's apologizing to people, he's wearing all white. You know, he's just made a complete transformation.
He's giving money to the homeless man.
By the way, what a great character that guy was.
Yeah, and even in that scene, you can tell he's starting to change, because it looks like he's chasing him down. He looks like he's annoyed that he spit on his shoes. Looks like he's going to beat him up or kill him and just take all his money. And you can tell he's thinking about doing that, but you can tell his conscience has already changed. Or like, this doesn't feel right. And instead, he's just asking, well, how did you get up like this? Like, you know. You know, why do you want to, why are you living like this? I mean, I couldn't take it if I was you. How do you put up with it? And he's asking him questions instead of just, I'm going to kill you, or, you know, I view you're inferior to me, so I'm just going to beat you up and take your money.
Right. Yeah. And that's a very important scene, because it introduces this idea of who would kick a dog? What kind of a man would kick a dog? And in a flashback, you see that Sotsi had a very abusive father who did kick the dog until it broke its back. So you see that that's a moment where he thinks, you know, if I do this to you,
I'm no better than him.
I'm no better than him. And he did run away. He couldn't take it. That's where he's coming from. Like, you just stood there. You just kept coming back. Why?
Mm-hmm. And even in that part, like, I thought when I first hear that, like, what he says, what kind of, you know, sicko kicks a dog, I was thinking it was him. He kicked the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him just evaluating, I'm a psychopath, or I am this horrible person. But then it was a big shock that it was his father, and it's sort of him just leading down the same path.
The movie's based on a book of the same name. Mm-hmm. And in the book, they make it a lot more obvious that his mother has AIDS. She's dying of AIDS. Where in the movie, you know, there's only one scene in a flashback where you see her and you can tell that she's sick, but you don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know exactly why. They do sort of, did you notice that when we're at the train station, there's all these ads, like, you know, for AIDS awareness. So maybe that was a little bit of a hint.
Yeah, it was a way of getting it in there without making it too heavy-handed. But the book makes it much more of a plot device.
Yeah, and with this character arc, when I was reading the review by Roger Ebert, who really enjoyed it, he says it's sort of a reversal from a lot of other character arcs and movies. Like, think about the Vengeance movies. Think like Mad Max. Think about Death Wish, where this guy, normal, average, everyday guy, good guy, something horrible happens to him, and he feel, and, you know, something with the law, like death of a loved one or something horrible, and somehow the law can't help him. They try to, and they screw it up. And then he just becomes a normal guy, and he's just, you know, he's getting a gun, going out in a path of vengeance, killing anything that it involves. That's like a lot of movies, like nearly any action movie or, you know, crime movie is like that. And this movie, it's the complete reversal. He is the horrible guy at the beginning, almost a psychopath. And at the end, he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he looks like he's completely redeemed himself almost.
And I tell my students when we watch this in class that if you want to, you can draw some Christian parallels, because there's so many biblical names in there. There's David, and there's Miriam, and there's Zechariah and Miriam. So there's definitely a thread there if you want to follow it. Plus, definitely, that final scene where he puts his hands up is almost a Christ-like gesture.
Yeah.
And of course, it's about a baby who comes along and changes somebody's life. So, I mean, if you want to, you can see those sorts of parallels in there. But you also, it works without it.
Yeah. And even then, you know, it's almost any movie has some sort of, if you really look into it, have some sort of biblical connection. I mean, you could just, I mean, even like The Matrix, that's has heavy-handed biblical references because it's the Bible. I mean, even it's one of those things where even if people aren't doing it consciously, it's almost subconsciously that there's going to be parallels to Jesus or some other story.
Right, or a way to look at it through that lens that you already know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a popular allusion.
And another film that's reminded me of, at least showing the person as bad as they can be at the beginning, was a bit of La Femme Nikita.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that movie, it's what she does is completely unredeemable. Even though she was a bit out of her mind on drugs, she gets a gun and shoots a cop in cold blood. Even he wasn't even doing anything. In this movie, he technically wasn't the one doing the killing, but he did nothing to stop it. You know, and it seems like they've done this a lot before where they mug a guy, and if he puts up any fight or tries to scream or scream for help or anything, they kill him. And he showed no remorse about that.
He's also the gang leader.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's at his, you know, he's the organizer. So he's the brains. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he's the brains behind the outfit. By the way, there's a rival gang leader in this named Fela, and he's wearing a purple mm-hmm. coat. He's actually a very famous rapper in South Africa.
Just curious, because I know you hear a lot of, like, you know, hip-hop and rap music
mm-hmm.
in this movie.
That's all him.
That's all him? I was about to ask that. And even in that beginning, even after he he was involved in the killing, when the other guy calls him out, like, you know, do you have any decency? Do you have any remorse about what we just did? He goes out and beats him up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, he has that, like, I like that because he couldn't be any worse of a human being than he was in that beginning of the movie. Even when he first gets the baby, he puts him in the shopping bag,
mm-hmm.
and if it's almost hard to watch a movie, he first takes him out. There's ants crawling all over the baby, and it's just you don't like him at all in the movie at the beginning.
No, you don't like him at all in the beginning, and he is an irredeemable character. But that scene where the guy provokes him, what gets him is not being accused of not having any decency. What gets mm-hmm. him is that the guy keeps saying, you know, do you have any feeling for anybody, a woman, you know, your parents? Where are your parents? What about a dog?
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he mentions the dog, we get back to that, you know, recurring theme of the worst you can be. And it brings out the worst in him.
Mm-hmm.
He beats the guy almost to death.
Yeah. And even if you look at the plot of this movie, when you first described it to me, which now I know sounds really silly, but almost seemed a little bit like a comedy, you know, gangster
puts baby in,
you know, finds a baby. I mean, I could just imagine, like, you know, in a, you know, comedy trailer, like, Sotsi was just an average, everyday gangster in Johannesburg. And then at one day after a carjacking, he finds in the car a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out that being a babysitter is not as easy as it looks. You know, rated PG-13 starring Rob Schneider or something. You know, just some really dumb comedy, but it's completely not.
You know, you could actually set this anywhere where you have a whole bunch of haves and have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's such a demarcation between kids living in storm drains and the really opulent house that he, you know, attempts to carjack the woman at.
Yeah.
The other thing I think is really effective in this, and it gets me every single time I watch it too, is that he's so convincing, you find yourself rooting for the wrong thing. You want him to keep the baby.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait a minute, what am I saying?
That's horrible.
That's horrible, right. Of course you have to give the baby back. But you feel how, you know, how much that hurts.
Yeah.
And it's a very short movie, actually.
It's only 1 hour 35. Yeah,
yeah, so I mean, that's a lot to put across, you know, make you like somebody unlikable and then make you root for the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, of course, when it all the pieces are settled, you know, it's just a very, you realize you really went on a journey with this person.
Yeah, and so what do you think now, because spoiler alert at the end, it seems that he did do the right thing. He got the baby back and there was no problem. But he's probably going to go to prison. What do you think's going to happen? Do you think it's going to be like, I know we both saw Baby Driver, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think it's going to be like where all these people are, like in the end of that movie, where all these people are testifying on his behalf, so he'll get like a reduced sentence and he'll be a better person? Or do you think now that he's going to prison, maybe he'll fall back into old ways because he's, you know, prisoners are going to get to him?
Interestingly enough, this is another reason why I love showing this in class. What you saw in the movie was not the original ending, and it's not the one in the book.
Oh, okay.
They actually filmed it the way it is in the book, which where he dies in, you know, at that last scene. He takes a baby bottle out of his pocket and they think it's a gun and
uh-huh.
he gets shot. That's the real ending. And they showed this, you know, to a test audience, and nobody liked that ending. You know, after rooting for the guy finally and liking him, they just felt that that ending was just too tragic.
Yeah.
So they filmed two other endings. One, he goes for the baby bottle. They shoot him, but they only wound him, and he takes off for the place yeah. where he was. And then, of course, the third one is that he is just arrested and goes to prison. Yeah, so
the one we see.
So the great thing about that is that, I, you know, after you see the movie, then I can show the other two endings, and then there's discussion to be had about which ending yeah. is better, and is it okay to take the author's book and change it?
Mm-hmm. I say that this is good. This is the right one. Like, that's too, that's just, you know, like the three, the porridge, it's just right. I think the one where it's, you know, he brings out the, they think it's a gun, it's a baby bottle. We've seen that in a lot of movies uh-huh. where, you know, there's a tense negotiation, like, he's got a gun, shoot him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, he was just reaching for a paper, like, you know, right. even Rebel Without a Cause, you know, something like that. I like the fact that it's just, and if he had the other way, he still did a bad thing. He still got to punish for it. I think it's too much of a cheat to let him get away with it. I think it's just perfect. He got the baby. He's not getting shot or killed, but he's still going to have to pay for his crimes and go to prison.
Yeah.
I think that's just the right ending of it being realistic and not too ultra tragic.
And I think, as to your question of, you know, what happens after the, you know, the movie's over, I think one of the reasons he does the right thing is because he wants to be able to get back to Miriam as an mm-hmm. upright stand-up guy. And there's no way to do that without accepting responsibility for what he does. So I guess that he does do some time. But, of course, he's seen worse. So, I mean, he probably know better than the average guy how to handle himself in prison. And I'm guessing that Miriam would come and see him.
Yeah, I'm like to think that he serves his time, but he's still going to be a good guy. He'll get out. He'll be with, you know, Miriam. And I think even he'll be back to friends with Op, and even Boston.
Right.
Yeah, and I think he's going to get out of that, he'll do something. And we're hopelessly optimistic, but I like to think that's what happens.
Let's say he, you know, gets out and changes his life, and now he's a upstanding citizen. Do you think the parents of the kid he kidnapped will let him have any sort of reunion or, you know, milestone?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, because remember, not only did he kidnap the baby, but he also shot the mm-hmm. woman and put her in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And then not only that, but there was also that home invasion where he killed one of his friends and just ran and left the father to deal with it. So,
yeah, true. So, there's a lot of crime.
There's
there.
A lot of there. I mean, sure, he did the right thing at the end and the baby's going to be fine, but I think it'll take the parents a long time to get over that.
Yeah, I would think so too. Oh, yeah. About the aunt scene. I always point this out to my students because it always upsets people. You know, it gets a big gasp. You know, this is 2006. You know, we have CGI.
Yeah,
there's no real. There's no real ants. You don't
they
really need to worry about the baby.
And the baby.
And I also tell them, because the other scene that upsets them is the father kicking the dog. And I have to tell them, you know, it sounds funny to say it like this, but the dog is actually a professional actor and mm-hmm. nothing is happening to the dog. They wouldn't even allow you to do that if you wanted to do it for real. It's just not possible.
Yeah, I mean,
but they are trained to, you know, do things that are acting.
Yeah, and they have, you know, every movie there's like no animals were harmed during the making of this film because they always have people on there making sure. I mean, even in something like the dog's purpose, which got that big news, even they sort of said that video was edited in some way where it made it look a lot worse than it actually was.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. So other performances that I like to stand out for me, I liked the character of Op,
mm-hmm.
who's kind of like the hopeless friend.
Mm-hmm.
He always follows him along the way, and he's kind of a doofus, and it's one of those things like, how is this guy a criminal?
Right, because he seems so sweet.
Yeah.
He has a real core of integrity.
Because you got, and you can say that even the character of Boston, like this guy tried to be a teacher. You know, it's because at the beginning he's lecturing about, you know, decency. Do you even know what that is? And I'm like, okay, right, but you're in the gang with him. Like,
right.
You know, it's like you're not exactly Mr. Innocent yourself.
Yeah. Another performance I think stands out is Terry Fado, who is Miriam.
Okay.
Because mm-hmm. I think she's very instantly likable, of course. Mm-hmm. But she's also no doormat. Mm-mm. You know, she has a strong presence. I think that that's really important in this. Otherwise, it's just all about, it would be just too one-sided, one point of view. She was also in Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom with Idris Elba.
Oh, okay. So this being a South African film, did you feel that there's a lot of commentary in the film about, you know, the issue of apartheid? Because there's obviously, like, Tsotsi lives in the slums, you know, almost reminds me of the slums in Slumdog Millionaire, where, you know, it's just all these, you know, little shacks and everything. And then the place where he kidnaps the baby is this, you know, really nice, almost like a mansion. It's got a gate and everything. It's got a, you know, and it seems like the reason why they're able to press the police so much is because, you know, they have this, you know, influence and everything. Do you feel that this is somewhat a commentary on the issue of apartheid? Or since this movie came out after apartheid sort of ended, that maybe I'm reaching for straws?
I think anything Athol Fugard does always tends to deal with apartheid. I actually mm-hmm. discovered him when I was in college and we read Master Harold and the Boys. So I knew him as a playwright. This is actually his one and only novel attempt. Mm-hmm. So that is a topic he deals with, but I think this is more about poverty, the power that you have when you have the money to, and the muscle versus, you know, when you've run away because your mother is dying, your father's violent, and you go live in a storm drain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in that storm drain, because I remember one thing that sort of confused me a little bit, it's after he beats up Boston, he runs. And I think there's a kid in there with him. So who were those kids? Was he friendly with them, or was he having like a flashback to when he was a kid and he was running away?
Yeah, if you watch that scene, because I tell my students to watch for it, because this is an example of a transition, and it's in the flashback. Gavin Hood sort of focuses on Tsotsi running, and then you see his feet, and then you look up again, and now it's a little kid.
Yeah.
So you know it's him, but he's younger. And then you see a scene where he is being offered something, some bread or something.
Yeah,
that's him.
And he's just imagining the him as his younger self?
Right.
Oh, okay, because that scene was confusing me, because then he goes back later to the kids who are by mm-hmm. those little tire things. And I was like, is he friendly with them? Do they look up to him and want to be a gangster like him? I was a little bit confused on that.
He was looking at where he came from. You know, he's holding this kid, and he is looking, because he's thinking about, he's preparing to give the baby back. And he's looking at where he came from and thinking, what would I have done in this situation? This is, you know, what is happening to this child is what happens when no one takes care of you. Mm-hmm. You know, but this child has everything. And I think he's just trying to weigh his options and see where he's been. Because when the kids come over to talk to him and he said, you know, I used to, you know, that top left one used to be mine. And they say, oh, did you bring your kid back here to see your old house? You know, so they're sort of laughing at him because who would want to come back?
Yeah. And that was one thing that confused me. Another thing I want to bring up that I thought was a little bit like, okay, maybe this is a little bit too cleaned up, was the home invasion murder.
Yeah.
When it looks like they're about to kill the father, but then Tsotsi finally just says he's had enough with this guy killing everybody, so he kills him and saves it, and then they run away. And so there's a home invasion and a murder. There'd be cops coming and, you know, coming on top of the kidnapping case. I just feel like he might do extra time, not only for the kidnapping, but for the murder, even if it was somewhat in self-defense. Like, it wouldn't be quite excused 100%.
You know, it's an interesting conundrum, because I don't know how that would play out in the court, because he shoots the guy so he doesn't shoot the father of the baby. Mm-hmm. Because the guy he shoots has a gun to that man's head. So he is, in a sense, looking out for the baby.
Yeah.
You know, he knows he's done the wrong thing by the mom. He wants to at least do something right by the...
Not make it as bad.
Yeah. So mitigating circumstances, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just feel like it would be a little bit... Like, that's a little bit... it was a little bit gone over a bit in the movie. At least that's for me.
Okay. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. And I know you talked a little bit already, but this novel was by Athol Fugard, and you've... So, in comparison, how would you say this goes to the novel?
Oh, it's not at all the same, because in the novel, you never feel sorry for him. And at the end, it's the ending for someone who leads a brutal life like he does. What's amazing to me about the movie is how well the main character brings that character to life and makes you like him, because that does not happen in the book.
That's interesting. So in the book, you, even when he has this arc, does he still have the arc where he goes from being this, you know, bad guy to like a decent human being?
No, he's irredeemable all the way through. He's a thug. He has a brief moment of, you know, maybe caring about others, but ends up, you know, he's, there's never a point where you think, oh, he's really going to turn his life around. It's how he deals with that situation. But he, at the end, he's not somebody that you were rooting for.
But even when he gives in the book, it's when he gives the baby back, and he gets shot, but he was reaching for the baby.
Oh, it's a completely different scene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's no showdown with the police like there is in the movie. It's done in a different way.
So does he give the baby back, or
he does, but he still dies.
No, but does he do it out of remorse for what he did, or is it more of just like, I got to do it, otherwise I can't have all this heat on me?
There's not as much reflection on his part. Okay. As you see in the character in the movie, which I think is, and I think the things in the movie are very subtle. It wouldn't work in the book the way it works on film. I mean, that's always the case. But you notice it, like if you notice, he starts off, he just sort of forces his way into that woman's house, you know, with a knife and forces her to help with the baby. And then later, you know, he knocks on the door and, you know, when she answers the door, he's very polite, you know, please, thank you. Mm-hmm. So he makes a change very gradually into things. You could see he's changing inside because he's acting different. Mm-hmm. He is not the same guy.
You don't need to get everything with a gun. You can just be polite and people will help you.
Right.
And I have to say, I probably would like the movie better. I'm not sure if I'd like the book because I like the whole him redeeming himself, and if he's just going to be like that without any redemption or anything, I think the movie would be more enjoyable.
I think the movie is the way to go. Usually the book's better, and you know, it seems criminal to say this about somebody as well regarded and as talented a writer as Athol Fugard. In fact, I think the book would probably work better if you'd never seen the movie.
Okay.
But I do have a affinity for movies that, you know, tie things up and give you hope.
Yeah, me too. So we could talk a little bit, but we talk about the author. We could talk about the director, Gavin Hood. So we'll talk a little bit later about his films in Hollywood, but other films he did in South Africa?
Well, he did when you get the DVD for Sotsi, they put, Miramax put an early short that he made called The Storekeeper, and it's about 22 minutes long, and I use this in my class too because it's the story based on a true story about a guy who owns a little general store out in the middle of nowhere. And he keeps getting robbed. Hmm. So first he, you know, puts up better burglar bars and he hires a night watchman. And, and then he ends up buying a gun. He has an invitation to go to his granddaughter's wedding, and he wants to be able to leave the store unattended. Mm-hmm. So he rigs up a shotgun. This comes from the actual story he was... it was based on, and with a tripwire, thinking that, you know, next time the guy tries, you know. So, and in the real story, it worked. The burglar was the one who was taken by surprise by his what he had rigged up. But what he said, what Gavin Hood said, intrigued him about this story is that, you know, it could have been anybody, and what if it was?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he explores that whole idea. And what's interesting about it as a... something to study in terms of film is that it's all really with no dialogue.
Oh, that's cool.
And he had said at first, you know, he was doing a lot of documentaries and things, and they didn't have a lot of money, and they had this really noisy camera. And he had originally had the script where the guy had a wife, so they decided, well, you know, let's say that the wife has already passed, then you don't have to have dialogue, and then you don't have to worry about the noisy camera because you're just going to add the sound in that you want. And so it's a great example of economy. You know, how do you tell a story when you're not going to have anybody talk? There's some music in there. It's not like a silent film of any kind, but it's very effective. And he talks about, you know, technical issues of how do you choose between, you know, 5,000 frog sounds, you know, which ones are you going to pick? And just a lot of technical details like that I think are interesting for film students.
Okay. And then this isn't the first of his films I've seen. Film I highly recommend, it came out last year, he did, was called Eye in the Sky.
With Helen Mirren.
And that's it's an interesting film just because It deals with the topic of drone warfare, and it's an intense movie, even though it's just all, nearly all of it's just in this like conference room about, well, what do we do with this situation? I think it has a lot. It's interesting because it makes you think about, you know, our military or even the British military, which it is in this film, how they deal with terrorists. Like, how do we deal, you know, is it right to shoot this? What about the damages? What about civilians in the nearby area? That's a highly one I recommend. One I wouldn't recommend unless you really want to watch a crappy movie is X-Men Origins Wolverine, which I remember watching Eye in the Sky, and I was like, wow, what a well-directed movie. I don't know who this guy is. I'm going to look him up. Okay, what? He did X-Men Origins Wolverine?
I'm going to call this his Ang Lee Hulk moment.
Yeah.
And I think everybody gets to make one really bad superhero movie. And mm-hmm. and you get to, they're forgiven for that. Eye in the Sky is great. And one of the things I like about it that reminds me of Sotsi is that the guy on the street who is, you know, manipulating the drone mm-hmm. is using street kids to, you know, hide the fact that doesn't belong there. And those kids remind me of the kids in Sotsi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In fact, I actually thought one of them was one of the kids from the storm drains, and I looked it up, and somebody else. But it had that same feeling.
Mm-hmm. And just somebody getting caught up in the middle of something, even though they're, you know, they're good and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Also, he did a couple of episodes of a show called Breakout Kings, which was on A&E.
I haven't heard of it.
It was actually a pretty good series. It was about, you know, the government hiring criminals to help them solve crimes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that thing's been done before, but mm-hmm. it was just neat to see his name come up. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, he must be... getting a foothold here in the States, and he also did Ender's Game.
Yeah, what did you think of that movie? Was it any good?
Because
I've heard everybody's just kind of,
There's so much, you know, lore and fandom surrounding the book.
Yeah.
I think that's just a difficult book to do. But given that, I think he does a serviceable job. It's not recognizably, to me, a Gavin Hood movie, because I think his other movies, including Eye in the Sky, have to do with some sort of moral problem. You know, you have to sort of think that through in your mind.
I remember looking up stuff on his stuff. He was talking about all the political things in X-Men Origins Wolverine, and like, no, probably not in there. You're just overcomplicating it. So we go from Gavin Hood and other films from South Africa. I'm not sure if it's a huge film country, but I know one film I've seen, which I really liked. This is from 1980. Was The Gods Must Be Crazy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I
and
love
that's such
that
a
movie.
Fun, that's such a
that
funny
is such
movie.
A great, yeah. great movie. Yeah, speaking of philosophical ideas, mm-hmm. yeah, that is a terrific movie. There's lots of stuff that's done, but not in like a story way. There's a whole lot of documentaries and things like Cry, The Beloved Country, and stuff like that. The reason I like Sotsi is it's a genuine story that does tell you something about the area and show you something about the area. And it did win best
foreign
film.
Language, yeah. Another one I forget. I think it's kind of a bit more Hollywood because I think a lot of it was done here, but it's set in South Africa and it's directed by Neil Blomkamp. It was from South Africa. It was District 9.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's a good one, too, because that has a lot to say about apartheid.
He did a really good episode of The Hire recently. I don't know if you saw that one.
The Hire?
Yes. Oh, The Hire is the series BMW put together. Where it's a series of stories. They give different directors a chance to
about
do
a car.
Well, it's always trying. You have to make the BMW look cool.
Oh, okay.
And Clive Owen is always the driver.
Okay.
So Ang Lee did one, and John Woo did one, and Neil Blomkamp just did one.
Oh, okay.
And it has Vera Farmiga and Dakota Fanning in it. It's really exciting. I like to show that in class, by the way, because in it they manage to destroy, you know, a tractor trailer and a perfectly nice car and a helicopter.
Oh, okay.
To entertain us.
Just to buy a BMW.
Yep. Lots of money spent just to make it look really cool. But, you know, destruction is the art of the deal these days.
Yep. Okay, then. And last question I'll ask for you. Is there anything else I haven't covered that you want to bring up?
I think we've covered everything. What about you? Did we not cover anything?
No, I think we've gotten everything well. Okay. And then just tell us about your classes.
Well, next semester I'm going to be teaching Intro to Film, American Cinema, and World Cinema.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Gavin Hood and his 2005 film, Sotsi. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Buster Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, what kind of bastard would break a dog's back?